Welcome to the Umbrella Hour. Your hosts are Dr. On, board-certified clinical sexologist, and Xander Keg, licensed clinical social worker. This episode is brought to you by the International Institute of Clinical Sexology. Xander will introduce our guest.
Thank you. Yes, On. I am very happy to be introducing our guest. Our guest is Dr. Laura. Dr. Laura is a Canadian clinician scientist, a gastroenterologist and epidemiologist, and she's going to be talking to us today about trans normality. It's a pro-social integrationist approach meant to persuade more people to accept trans people into society at large. Welcome to the show, Dr. Laura.
Yeah, thank you, Xander, and thank you, and thank you for having me on the program.
Absolutely. Well, why don't we just start out talking about this trans normality approach. Why do we need this trans normality approach now?
Yeah, so maybe I'll just start by just saying a little bit about myself, my background. I know I'm not probably a familiar voice or familiar face to your audience, so it probably makes a little more sense to know who I am, to understand how I got to this positioning. So my name is Laura Trogovnik. I'm a Canadian healthcare professional and also a researcher. And I'm obviously a woman of trans history, which some people will call trans woman. And my background is that I transitioned not as a child or adolescent, but relatively early in my adulthood, actually in the middle of my medical training. And this was at a time, my transition started 25 years ago in the year 2000 or late in the year 2000. And at the time, I had come from a background where I was someone who was always trying to fit in. And even though when I was living as a male, it was very important, I was not someone who was looking to stand out apart from the crowd, which was probably one of the reasons that held back my transition for so long, because until that time, until I was able to get on the internet and actually meet some people whose lives resonated with my own, I had envisioned a pathway of being trans and living in the world is not something that was compatible with the way I wanted to live. I did not want to be outreed. I did not want to be out there. I wanted to be able to live a normal and recognizable life, both to myself and to people who were around me. And it really wasn't until I saw models of people who were living the lives that I wanted to see before I felt comfortable pursuing my own path. And my goal when I transitioned was not to stand apart from everybody else, but to try to do this in a way that would allow me to continue on with my life and fitting in as a regular member of society. And I'm not saying even back then every trans person had that as a goal, but this was definitely something in terms of how we view transition was as a transitory phase, something you would do as a temporary measure where you might be out there for a little while and you might stand out and you might look a bit odd and you might be learning the ropes, but where your long-term goal was to eventually find a place where you would be able to fit into society as opposed to standing apart from society. And thankfully, I was able to do this. Now, I don't want to say this was all because of hard work, because I recognize I came to the table with a lot of privilege. I was started fairly young. I had a body type that was very easy in terms of being able to pass as my target gender. I was training to become a doctor and I was able to get access to funds to afford the kinds of surgery and care that would allow me to effortlessly, relatively easily fit in compared to some of my compatriots. And thankfully, at that time, because there was not a lot of scrutiny around trans people in general, I was able to do this. So I was able to get back to a job. I got married, was actually able to bring children into this world. And basically, for the first 20 years after I transitioned, I was able to live what I would call a fairly fully integrated life, meaning that I had a house with my husband and my children. We lived among other people. We had our kids in regular neighborhood activities. They played sports. We had backyard barbecues, and we didn't tell anybody about my past. If people figured it out, that was on them, but I suspect that most of them were not able to. And this was the life that I wanted, and I was really pleased to be able to do this. And obviously, there were many other people of my generation who were able to accomplish very similar things. Now, in the late 90s, in 2000s, I was paying attention to trans discourse, mostly at a little bit of a reserve. So I was starting to read online and keep up with the news. And what I was recognizing is that obviously there was starting to be a bit of backsliding on trans acceptance. This was the time where we were starting to get a bit of skepticality around things like pediatric medical transition. Sports issues were starting to come up, and the standing of trans people in society was starting to go down. And around 2021, I made a decision that one of the things that was missing and one of the reasons why we were losing standing is that the representation that we had of trans people to the general public was not reflective of my life. It was not reflective of the lives of many people who transitioned in the same cohort as me and were able to integrate. And so my mission when I came out was twofold. One was for other trans people as potentially an aspirational target, so that anybody who was thinking of coming out or someone who's early in transition could realize that having an outcome like mine, where you were able to be successful in the world, to integrate into regular society, to be thought of as a woman by other people, to not be living in a world full of stigma, that this was a possibility. And I wanted to keep this lane open as a possibility for anyone who wanted it. And the second was to act as someone who would be potentially relatable to the general public, because they were often getting visions of transsexuality that were totally unrelatable to the life I was living. And I thought by getting more public, by having more examples of people like myself out in the general public, this might be able to turn the narrative a little bit. Now, of course, the opposition came on fairly strong and fairly fast. I do not know how successful any one person can be in changing the narrative, but I still do think that there is a role for this type of fronting. So I want to just go back and to answer your question. We've all seen polling recently about some of the key touchstone issues of trans people in society, around sports, around access to single-sex spaces, about prisons, about access to hormones. And when you ask people a very specific question, which seems very specific, and say, should trans women be able to access single-sex spaces with biological women? And you put that survey out to the general public, what do they think of when they hear the word trans woman? Do they think of me, or do they think of some modal image of a trans woman that is out there in the media, which is usually someone who is not trying, or at least not appearing to try to fit into society, or someone who is in early transition, or some of the more prurient images that are often platformed on social media? Now, if I was a cis woman and I had limited exposure to transsexuality, and this is the first thing I thought of when someone says trans woman, I know how I'm going to answer that question. So what if we could change the image, and what would it take to change the image in the average person's eye about what transsexualism is? I'd like it. I'm not saying it has to look exactly like me, but what's key is that it looks like somebody that they can relate to. The public image of transsexuality is something unrelatable. And so what we end up seeing when the average person who has limited exposure to the trans experience is provided with a binary choice between what gender activists are selling and between what gender criticals are selling, it's very understandable why the average person is finding the arguments of the gender critical to be much more compelling and why we are losing ground. And so part of transnormality is saying, what is the kind of messaging that we can put out there that would appeal to the general public more than what the gender criticals are putting out, and to try to bring the narrative back to our acceptance.
Okay. A follow-up question I have is, how is it going? You've been going on different podcasts, you're writing a Substack, there are probably lots of other things that you're doing. How do you feel your message is being received? And in particular, I'd love to hear how other members of quote-unquote trans community, I don't really think there is such a thing, how are they responding to this message?
Yeah, so it's a difficult line to tread, because part of the message, when I'm thinking of what I'm trying to sell, it's not so much that there is one right way to be trans, and that's the way I'm doing it. I recognize there's a lot of different pathways, and people have a lot of different goals for what they want out of their transition, and I don't intend to diminish anyone's right to bodily autonomy and to make the best choices for them for their own lives. Not everybody who transition is doing it because they intend to be a binary assimilationist, which is how I describe myself, and that is fine. However, if we are trying to make the case for our acceptance to the general public, you want to make sure that your message is something that resonates with the general public and that your messengers are relatable to the general public. Like I said, it's not to diminish the humanity of other trans people, but when those people are being platformed, whether they're being platformed intentionally or whether they're being platformed for as part of oppositional political purposes, it does not sell an image that is relatable and respectable to the general public. And so part of this is treading this line between trying to tell trans people, it's not that I'm working against you, but I'm trying to package this message, a message that actually I think benefits all trans people, regardless of their goals, in a way that is relatable to the public. Similarly, whether we say this out loud or not, when you watch the news or when you think of who your spokespeople, like, you know, someone who's anchoring the news, someone who's doing the weather, who your actors and actresses are, we generally will pick people not because people, let's say, who present better, because that's who people want to hear the news from. Now, you can argue about whether that matters or not, but in the real world, those things do. And so I recognize, I'm not saying it has to be me specifically, but obviously depending on your audience, I'm obviously going to be more relatable to an audience of middle-aged professional people than potentially I would be at, let's say, an African-American church or in a new immigrant community. And so it's not just about how I present, but it's the idea behind it is to find other representatives who can speak to people where they are in language that they understand and make the case for why accepting trans people and embracing trans people is to the benefit of society. And so part of this is recognizing that when we provide trans people with a key set of protections, it increases the likelihood that they are going to be able to be fully functioning members of society. Now, this is whether they integrate or not. There's no benefit to society in creating a pariah class out of trans people. As much as it might trigger the id to be able to put down trans people and to say they're bad people and to call them predators and to call them all sorts of names, it does not benefit society to create an entire class of people and say that you do not have access to the same ability to succeed, to the same ability to be accepted as everybody else. They become a burden on society, and that's not to society's benefit. And so part of the argument that I'm trying to make to the average person is that when you allow trans people to transition and to have the best chance of living a stigma-free life, access to medications, access to surgeries, be able to have legal protections to protect people from discrimination in things like education, housing, employment, and in general, just the pursuit of happiness. When you allow people the right to privacy so they don't constantly wearing a scarlet letter and don't have their medical history hanging over them. And when you do this by granting trans people a legal pathway to womanhood that remains respectful and is cognizant of the impact that has on society in general, it gives trans people the best chance to succeed, to be part of their communities, to make a living, to pay their taxes, and to contribute to the commonwealth of society. And I know a lot of people, when they're arguing about why should we accept trans people, they put it in terms that why it's important to me as a trans person to be accepted. Yes, it is very important to me as a trans person to be accepted, but it betters society. It betters everybody when we offer these protections to give trans people the best chance of doing this.
Laura.
Yes.
I have a question for you. Have people mentioned to you that this feels or sounds that it may be possibly a form of classism?
Or like elitist.
Yeah.
I started this conversation by talking about the privileges that I had and that were, like a lot of privileges, unearned. This is something that I had the benefit of and have been able to, because I had this privilege, to have a level of success that I may not have otherwise had. And so I recognize that having privilege doesn't mean you have to turn away from your own success, but it is important to recognize that I had advantages that many people don't. When I'm advocating for people for these protections, these are the kind of protections that benefit everybody. So if I am able, because I come in a good package that people can relate to, if I am able to sell a message that gets these rights, it's not just me who gets these rights. It's everybody who gets these rights. And these are the core rights that don't just benefit me and keep me happy and keep me free of feeling discriminated. These are the core rights that will give every trans person the best chance to succeed and make their own way in the world. Now, I recognize it's always a challenge when you don't come from a lot and you see someone like myself who's successful. And like I said, one of the tightropes that I have to walk is recognizing and being aware and reminding myself that I didn't start from the same place as everybody else. But just like a lot of sort of progressive politicians, many of whom also came from backgrounds or came from privilege, but whose core message is still advocating for people that maybe didn't have that privilege and advocating for the types of things that benefit everybody. Now, I recognize part of what I'm doing also is there's a lot of people might have issues that maybe they believe are more important to them, that I believe are more peripheral to core protections. And they're free to advocate those as they will. So the fact that I don't want to spend a lot of time, let's say, talking about sports or talking about the right to be very gender variant or things like that I've advocated against, which is limiting, being more cognizant of how we grant legal access, is to say that when we fix this and do this right, it ultimately benefits everybody. And so I recognize it's a tough line to cross. And yes, I have been accused of being elitist because I think there's a visceral reaction when you see someone who has got privilege, who's living well. And when you don't have it or recognize, there can be a visceral reaction to that. And I do have to be aware of that. And I do have to be cognizant of it.
I do think it's important to have people who can be good people. I don't think that's something that has ever really changed. We've always looked up to people who can convey their thoughts succinctly and garner the attention of the audience who they're addressing. But I also, because I have come from a place in life where I was privileged, and before I transitioned, I always said in later years, I always made a great drag queen because people were gravitated to my looks. And it used to bother me a lot because I have a brain. And so I was of that school of thought that mattered to me. Now, having said that, I've also witnessed and experienced sexism myself.
Yeah.
And so I think there's that concern that came to mind as you were talking, that is an ideal world. And I'm needing to be, I think, mindful of the work that you're doing. So just bear with me.
No problem.
It's an ideal world because in reality, whether we're cis or trans or queer, whomever we are, we do recognize that our human potential is to gravitate to people who we are attracted to or who we find attractive.
Resonate with us. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm battling a little bit.
Just to pick up on that, I just wasn't sure if you were saying more, but when you say you're battling a bit, that as someone, and you can correct me if I'm saying anything sort of out of school here, you're wary of people who put themselves out there as saying, this is what trans people should be, or saying this is what, there's one right way of doing this and one wrong, and a lot of wrong ways of doing this. Is that?
So I'm not saying that you're doing that. I'm saying that when you go to do this work, which it sounds like you've started and you're entrenched now in sending out a message that you want people to be able to connect with you and you in turn with them, I'm not sure that it will be modeled that way by others. And that's my concern.
So when you say it's not going to be modeled this way by others, are you saying that what I'm doing is going to be intentionally misrepresented?
Not at all. It's very similar to if we're in the corporate world, for instance,
sure,
and we report to a CEO. You're a scientist. You work in the medical field.
I do.
And I'm pretty sure you've probably met the hospital CEO.
I have.
You have that rapport. Whatever that rapport is, it may be limited, but you have that rapport.
Mm-hmm.
That CEO, if they are decent human beings, they will proceed as they always would. But then we have and this is where the sexism comes in, where we have the crowd who will only accept the one person, the trans person, as someone who is appealing to them. And so therefore, because they present and they are, as you stated, you were young, so you were able to transition successfully. You didn't have to worry about not passing. That person will probably and most likely do well. I've known a number of people like that. That has not been my experience. So I'm speaking from my own experience. That has not been my experience. So I have had the good, the bad, and the ugly. I'm tough. I'm tough skinned. I can handle that. But I think in doing this work, we at some point have to circle back and be able to present a more, I think, variety of who we are, and people who can effectively speak well may not look like the ideal model type, but look or present well. And I experienced this when we had the HRO in Jacksonville. And it was really eye-opening to me. I had actually gone in because I was doing documentary shorts as a journalist, just to try to figure out what was the message, were people received, was there resistance. And I will tell you, I heard some profoundly disturbing statements.
Thank you.
We will be taking our first commercial break. You are listening to the Umbrella Hour with Dr. On and Xander Kagg. Our guest this hour is Dr. Laura Targovnik. Dr. Laura is a Canadian clinician, scientist, gastroenterologist, and epidemiologist. She has been telling us about her goal of promoting transnormality, a pro-social integrationist model to persuade more people to accept trans people into society. We hope that you've enjoyed the conversation so far. Stay tuned. We'll be back shortly.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Imagine. Every day, clients walk into your office with their concerns about intimacy, identity, desire, and trauma. Questions that require more than basic training. Emotional and sexual dynamics are evolving, and today's professionals must evolve with them. We hear from parents unable to start conversations with their children around identity. Too often, adolescents have learned their sexual ideas from the internet. Couples have difficulty communicating about sex with each other. At the International Institute of Clinical Sexology, you can gain the specialized skills and knowledge to address those issues with confidence. Whether you are a therapist, coach, educator, or other healthcare professional, our advanced certifications and PhD program empower you to become a highly skilled, sought-after sex therapist. Expand your expertise. Elevate your earning potential. Start your journey today with the International Institute of Clinical Sexology. Imagine making a difference in our world. Learn more at clinicalsexologyphd.org.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries and cream.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
We are back from our first commercial break. You are listening to the Umbrella Hour with Dr. On and Xander Kagg, and our guest is Dr. Laura. Dr. Laura is a Canadian clinician, scientist, gastroenterologist, and epidemiologist. Let's get back to the show. We had some trans females who didn't actually physically maybe present well. They dressed well. They were gracious. But there were some remarks made by people who were in positions who I felt should have known better and didn't care. They pushed that agenda that you're talking about. So just bear with me because I'm truly interested in your work because I do think we need something. We need to move forward. But in this particular case, it was something I was paying attention to, and I wanted to know if more people felt that way. And so I sat with a number of people just to get a sense of the conversations that were being held among them. And these individuals would never aspire to be the Cindy Crawfords. The sentiments were that there needed to be people who did look like the Cindy Crawfords. I'm choosing Cindy Crawford. They didn't say Cindy Crawford.
Yeah. I don't look like Cindy Crawford.
No, you have a different look. To present to city council members who were truly, many of them were resistant and afraid. And as we know, fear can do odd things to people.
Yeah. So I think there's a few different threads there that I want to pick up on. So the first one is about passability, which is, I know, is always like a bit of a third rail when you're talking about it in trans, because I know a lot of people who are not trans. And even within the trans community, equivalent passability and legitimacy, and passability and realness or trueness. And this is something that obviously I recognize that because two people can have the exact same personality within the trans community, but if one passes well and the other one doesn't pass as well, the person who passes well will be assumed to be pure of soul and mind because they look more like a real woman. So if you ask me the question of, is that right? Obviously not. We don't work in a world of should and is. We also have to recognize that people who do pass or people who present well are going to be, at least from an audience that is unfamiliar with trans issues, are going to be received. They're going to get that door opened more quickly. They're going to get a seat at the table more quickly. Now, the key is if you have that seat at the table, what is the message you want to do when you're out there? Is it going to be just about yourself or is it going to be advocating for all people? So that's one element of it. The second is when I'm talking about transnormality, I don't talk purely in terms of passability. I talk about presentability because people can be non-passable or have remnants of whatever they look that someone could look at them long enough or listen to them long enough and recognize that they probably have a history of transition. And this is true of myself too. If someone spends enough time with me and looks at me long enough up and down, they may eventually put together that I have a trans history. And that's fine. The point is, it's about relatability, which means that are those people presenting in a way, even though they might not look like a flawless female specimen, that someone would look at them and say, I can see what's going on here. I can see that they're trying. I can see where their soul is at. Now, depending on the audience you're talking to, there is going to be a bit of a process. So when we look at things like gay acceptance and what got sort of the average citizen who had minimal familiarity with the gay lifestyle, with gay people who didn't have gay people in their lives, the kind of models of gay life that they were able to first relate to were often the ones that were most recognizable to them. So people who were in the straight acting, straight looking type of stereotype, who they could look at and go like, this person is just like me. They look like me. They're trying to live lives like me. They care about their families and their homes. They go to whatever religious services they do. They volunteer in their communities. These are people I can relate to. As people started accepting, you started to get more and more diverse expressions, let's say, of the homosexual or the gay experience in media and in life. And people were able to, because they had this point of entry, were much more eager to accept that. So when we start getting more of the queering of gay imagery in the media, people were much more able to accept it and welcome it into their lives because they had that entry point. Now, of course, people who are adjacent to the queer community all along, queer people always existed. There were always queer members of the gay community. People who were adjacent accepted them across the board. But for the people who were unfamiliar, that was the point of entry until you eventually had things like RuPaul's Drag Race or Queer Eye for the Straight Guy, or more queer representations of the LGBTQ lifestyle, were sort of, okay, well, I get this now because I've had, it's like when you go to a restaurant for new cuisine and you try the thing that tastes most like Western food, if you're from a Western background. And then you go there a few times and you try the things that are a bit adjacent, television adjacent, until you've tried everything on the menu. It is a very similar thing. So with right now, with the trans community, because trans people are generally unfamiliar with trans people, but if someone who is relatable becomes their first point of entry, then you can start expanding their palette over time. But if you start with the most outre item on the menu, it's probably going to be off-putting, or they might not even want to try it because it looks odd on the plate, or it has a weird texture, or whatever it might be. This is the same model that we're trying to do.
It makes me think of, in more general terms, non-conformity, right? And people who are a bit more avant-garde. I mean, if you think about it, in the 1980s, I remember growing up in Los Angeles, I would see people with blue mohawks dressed in all black, lots of leather with spikes coming out of their chins or their face or right. And so it was clear like, oh, they're a punk rocker. They listen to punk rock music and they've got a punk rock attitude. Right. It was the whole thing about them. And they were never going to be able to convince society at large that everything should be punk rock or that we should be more open to integrating punk rock into church services and in all the workplaces. And maybe we should let children get mohawks and put spikes out of their skulls and right, like punk rock, right? But there were punk rock people. Right? Sure. People who like punk rock attitude, punk rock style of dress, punk rock music, going to punk rock clubs, the whole thing. You can do your thing. You know, I've heard people reference to trans became a fad, like goth or something like that, right? It just became something that high school kids were doing as a trend. So it makes sense to me in looking at it from that point of view of, for me, prior to transition, I was not conforming to societal or family expectations of how a female should behave, dress, partner, right? I was lesbian, but I knew that. I knew that I was doing something that was outside of the norm expectation of society and my family and the Catholic Church that I grew up in. And it never dawned on me that my goal was to make the church and my family and society not only accept me, but somehow bend all of their ideas and notions and rules to accommodate me, and then slowly but surely make changes in their own worldviews and their own lifestyles and their own personal appearance to adopt this gender nonconforming, right? So there's something about the blending in, right? You use the word passing. I don't use that word. I don't like it. I just say blending in, right? It's like the blending in for me was an active choice. I could have continued to be a gender nonconforming lesbian woman and deal with the constant reaction from people in society, in public, accessing bathrooms, walking into restaurants. It was a constant thing that I dealt with. And when I learned of this idea of medical transition and being trans, which I learned about years before I started my medical transition, I was like, oh, I could take a medication and I could blend in, and I wouldn't have to be the poster child for Dyke on campus. I wouldn't have to be the poster child for anything. I could just go through life not having to deal with all of that resistance, not have to be that salmon swimming upstream. I could swim with the stream. And you know what? I like swimming with the stream. I was 39 years old when I started my medical transition. I gave it the good try. You know what I mean? I really did. I was out there living in the world, being gender nonconforming, fighting the good fight and talking and all the things that I was doing. But then all I had to do was this, medically transition, blend in and live my life. You were talking, Laura, about how you were just living your life. And then things got to a certain point. You were like, okay, I'm going to disclose to varying degrees who I am and what my experience is in order to give a different message out to the world, a different image and a different message, which I really appreciate. And so for me, I've been walking that middle place between a lot of people don't know and a lot of people do know. And right. So we're all doing it in different ways, trying to live our lives. And I appreciate the commitment to coming out of a nice, comfortable life to like, you didn't have to do this, right? To say, but wait a minute, because ultimately, if things keep going the way they're going, you people like you and I, we're going to be impacted too. We're not going to escape, right? We're not going to be able to get away from or get away with certain things. If a law passes in our state or our country, it impacts us, right? Just like the people who are out there being punk rock version of trans, right?
Yeah. And like I said, I come from privilege and as these laws, as these sort of anti-trans laws.
Well, and I don't see. So I can talk from a person who doesn't come from that kind of privilege. I still found my way to the same place that you did.
Yeah. But what I'm saying, the privilege I have now of being a passable, integrated person with a good job and a family and all those things, and not where I came from, but where I'm at now.
Got it. Yeah.
Is that as the trans community gets under more pressure and is under more duress, I'm still going to be one of the last people affected from it because I've got layers of protection around me. And so I don't want to make it sound like I'm doing the sainted thing by coming out because putting myself on this pedestal because of look at me, I'm the perfect trans person, because that's not what this is about.
No, but it's a safety factor for a lot of people.
No, but you're right. I could have stayed, I don't want to say the word stealth, but I could have stayed in my woodwork position where nobody at work or very few people at work, aside from people who might have known me 30 years ago or heard about me 30 years ago knew. I could have kept that going for a long time. I had no public record of being trans, you know, I didn't have to worry about someone Googling my name, putting that together. But I also recognize that that's a very tenuous position to be in. And that at any moment, that can all come crashing down because of someone disclosing someone, someone's saying something to the media, someone saying something to someone, someone in some position of power. So I don't want to make it seem like, yeah, like this could happen to any of us. But I wanted to touch back on something you said earlier that was resonant about this whole point of conformity. And because I was on another podcast a few weeks ago, one you're probably familiar with, I don't know if your listeners are familiar with it, but it's called Informed Dissent. And it's a very strongly gender critical podcast with this woman named Jamie Reed, who is probably very, very well known. Her claim is that she blew the whistle on bad practice in a pediatric medical clinic somewhere in the States and has parlayed this into being sort of a spokesperson for the gender critical movement. And another woman named Corey Kahn, who's a detransitioned, or I should say another man now, a detransitioned trans person who actually transitioned roughly at the same time I did. And Jamie was trying to make the case of, why did I have to do this? Why couldn't I have just been a gender non-conforming male and a gender non-conforming gay male? That's not what I really wanted out of life. Even when I was living as a male, I was not non-conforming. I had no interest in being someone who was always going to be pointed and stared at and always going to be, look at this person who is making a statement, an obvious man walking around in feminine garb. That really was not how I wanted to live my life. I transitioned because I wanted to fit in and I didn't see a path forward conforming as a male. That's why I did it. And it's a fundamental misunderstanding of why people think, why is it so important to transition genders? And you touched on this yourself, is that there came a point in your life too, where nonconformity, as much as it might have served a purpose at some point in your transition or some point in your pre-transition life, wasn't really who you wanted to be. And I think there's a lot of trans people who aren't looking to stand out and are looking for the pathways to allow them to have the life that I had. And I think obviously there's, depending on when you transition, what resource you have, it can be harder. But ideally, I'd like to live in a world where as many people as is possible, as many people as is feasible, have the path to get to where I am, if that is what they want.
Yeah, no, I like that. It's very clear what you're not saying that everybody should make the same choices that you've made or that I've made or other people have made. Absolutely not.
For other people.
Yeah. Yeah, but, but one of the things I do recognize that is more prominent now when I go into trans community, or in particular, if I go into like FTM or a trans man community, is that there really is a strong negative message about being quote unquote a binary trans person, or people will use language like cis privilege or trans person with cis privilege, or they'll talk about trans people who get married, maybe have families or not. Like, I'm married, we don't have children, right? As being, we have heteronormative. And so they're using all of this very academic postmodernist language to talk about people within our own quote-unquote community in a very dehumanizing way, right? In a denigrating way, in a demonizing way. So my message is similar to yours, which is, I'm going to live my life my way, and I want other people to know that this is an option for them as well. And then you can go be your punk rock self, so to speak. You can go be very, people can go be very gender non-conforming and non-binary. They can dress how they want to dress. They can just do all those things. But I like to remind people, you shouldn't be surprised if from time to time you're going to encounter people who look at you very strange, like you're a strange person to them, because they're not familiar. Right? If you see punk rock people walking around today, you don't see it as often. You know, they stand out. They really do stand out. And so people are going to look at them. We're drawn to things that are different, right? Our eyes are drawn to those kinds of things. And so when you have people who are presenting themselves in a particular way that's counter or contrary to what people expect, that doesn't mean they're right. Those expectations aren't correct, but it does mean that if you're not conforming to those expectations, there are going to be people that we encounter from time to time, depending on who we are, could be more often, that are going to take a hard line position against us, regardless of whether we conform or not. But at least,
so personally,
somebody like me, yeah, right, similar to you, I can get into spaces. I can go into places and talk to people without disclosing that I'm trans, and I can be an icebreaker. I can be a bridge builder. I can do that work in places that maybe some of my friends who aren't as binary, so to speak, in their gender presentation could do. They can go to other places that I probably couldn't go. And so I say to people, you do you, you let me do me, and we can just coexist, and let's work towards more rights and more access. without having to burn bridges and tear people down. That's what I'd like to see, is less of that internally, but also just across the different communities as well.
We will be taking our second commercial break. You are listening to The Umbrella Hour with Dr. On and Xander Kagg. And our guest this hour is Dr. Laura Targovnik. Dr. Laura is a Canadian clinician, scientist, gastroenterologist, and epidemiologist. She has been talking with us about her goal of promoting trans normality, a pro-social integrationist model to persuade more people to accept trans people into society. We hope that you've enjoyed this conversation so far. We are more than happy to play our sponsor's commercial and always grateful to be able to do so. Stay tuned. We'll be back shortly.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Sarah wasn't bad at her job. She was stuck in hidden grief. After her dog died, she took a sales role just to stay busy. But every pitch felt empty. A Cogna Movement session uncovered that she was seeking the warmth of her dog rather than serving her clients. Using our patented movement and sensory patterns, she cleared the grief and rocketed to the top. What hidden emotion is holding you back? Try our Essentials program at the special UK Health Radio rate. Visit cognamovement.com/radio or click on the Cogna Movement banner on the UK Health Radio homepage. Results vary.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach. Here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
We are back from our second commercial break. You are listening to The Umbrella Hour with Dr. On and Xander Kagg. And our guest this hour is Dr. Laura Targovnik. Dr. Laura is a Canadian clinician, scientist, gastroenterologist, and epidemiologist. Let's get back to the show.
I'd love everyone to get along and everybody to understand everybody else's message and all that kind of thing. The reality is people can think what they want to think at the end of the day. And if someone's a nonconformist and they have a vision of the world where nonconformity is the right way to be and all conformists are sellouts and whatever, that's fine. People are allowed to think that. I don't need to have the support of everybody on the extremes to get my job done. Like, so when I go talk to people who are strongly gender-critical, or what they call like the ultra-TERFs, the kind of people who look at me and say that there's no such thing as a trans woman, and at best you're just a predator with a really good costume. I'm not trying to convince that person that I am a human being. I don't care what that person thinks. I am trying to sell a message that to the average person that will look at me and look at that person and say, I want nothing to do with that person. I want that person pushed back to the modern society with virulent anti-Semites and those types of people. Like, that's where I want that message to be. When we present...
Yeah, no, that's perfect, because that's the majority of people.
That's the majority of people. So if we as a community, if our predominant message seems as extreme as that, but just of an opposite valence, people are going to find that the people who are a little bit gender critical are going to drift to that pole. I want to pull them away from that pole. I want to pull them back to the middle. Because there are people who are gender critical who will listen to me. They might not necessarily agree with me right away, but they will listen to me because I can talk to them in a language that is on their wavelength. Now, they might not agree with everything I say. They might not agree with my position on, let's say, pediatric medical transition, or they might not agree with my position on bathrooms and locker rooms, but I can say it in a way that they'll understand where I'm coming from that sounds human, as opposed to being a flamethrower. Or to someone who is right on the middle, who's kind of like, yeah, here's some things this way, here's some things that way. That's where people like myself. And I'm not saying it's not just about passability. No one here knows what I look like on this radio show, but I'm saying it in a way that hopefully is relatable to people. And so that's an important thing. I'm not going to concern myself with making everybody love me on the extremes or trying to convince everybody in extremes that like, no, this is the right way. I am trying to talk to the middle and I'm trying to give them someone to listen to that they can relate to.
Yeah, it works for me.
How have you been received so far, Laura? Has it been positive?
You know, it's been positive, but slow. So one of the things that I think like anybody who's starting out is fighting against is just the platform and reach. So I have a following of about 5,500 people on Twitter, which isn't that much. But, you know, I say things and it's not always how many people are listening to you, but who's listening to you at a given time. So the hope is not so much that I have to end up with like 200,000 followers by the end of the year, but that I'm saying something that somebody hears about who actually has access. So even just getting on your podcast today, you have an audience, you have a reach. It's obviously great to be invited on here because normally I'm not going to get that platform to sell this message. I don't know who's going to be listening to this today. You know your numbers better than I do, but however many there are, maybe there's someone listening to this today who's going, you know what? That really resonates. And maybe it's someone who, like I said, this is no slate against your podcast, which, you know, you're on this network, you have a lot of reach, but maybe it's someone with twice as much or 10 times as much. And now they want to talk to me or talk to other people like me and this message kind of sells with them. So that's one way. The second thing is just on a local level. So you mentioned earlier in my introduction, so I'm the chair of my division. I have 50 people plus in my department. Most of them did not know I was trans when they hired me to do this job. I interact probably over the course of the year with thousands of people within my department who are within my patient circle, within my clinical circle, both in my hospital, in my university, and around the world. And because they know someone like me as their key representation of being trans, I am, and I'm not saying this conceitedly, I am a vaccine against transphobia. These are the kind of people who, in my absence, or in the absence of someone like me, and there's people who are doing this all over the place in professional circles, or in their jobs, or in their schools, or in their military units, who, when they think of a trans person, they're not thinking of the sordid image. They are thinking of that person they work with. They are thinking of that person in their family. They are thinking of the person wearing a uniform. They are thinking of that person at the checkout of the diner. They're thinking about the person who's about to fix their car. They are thinking of a person who is relatable. And when they think of that person and they hear an anti-trans message, they're like, that isn't Laura. We have the potential to be one of the most powerful preventative. We talk about it's easier to prevent a problem than fix a problem. By keeping people inside, by the fact that they know who we are, protects them from the allure of transphobia.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Again, it's what I said just a little bit ago. I'm going to reach certain people. You're going to reach certain people. On's going to reach certain people. The people that we know are going to be reaching other people.
Xander's got to go. It'll be good to bring you back, Laura.
I'd love to come back.
Thank you, Laura. I'll follow up with you.
Yeah, thanks, Xander. This was a great opportunity. Thank you for having me on the program.
We've reached the end of the Umbrella Hour. Our guest was Dr. Laura Targovnik. We hope that you enjoyed the hour as much as we did. We hope to have Dr. Laura return for another episode. Until next time, thank you for listening.